now it's time for the Dental Hacks interview.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Dental Hacks podcast. Tonight we have a very special episode with Tarun Agarwal, who almost all of you probably know. He's an implant and imaging speaker extraordinaire, spoken all over the world. He's great. He's energetic. He's got a brand new education center down in his office in Raleigh, North Carolina, which I was actually there a couple months ago. It's fantastic. You should all go check it out. But tonight, we're just going to sit down, me and Alan, Tarun, and just kind of talk like regular people and talk about the issues that are important to you. And he's got a lot of great things lined up for us. So without further ado, let's bring on Tarun.
Is that my cue to say something? That's your cue.
Welcome, Tarun. All right.
Well, you know, I have to enter the 21st century and understand this digital world. I don't really know what we're doing here.
I don't believe that for one second. That's a lie. You're lying.
Well, you know, typically my people are doing tech support for the rest of the world, so I'm trying to figure it all out.
Al's working on a Commodore 64, so yeah. Just
don't feel Atari with the joystick button.
I got a 2600 here. I'm rocking the 2600.
Dude, those games were the best, I'm telling you.
All right, so Tarun, the first thing we were talking about a little bit earlier. Tell us a little bit about how you grew up. It sounds like you are what they might call a second generation immigrant. Is that correct? Tell me about your parents and where you grew up and what it was like, because you got kind of an interesting story.
Well, I don't really know where to begin with that, but let's start at the beginning. So,
Good call. Well,
I mean, that's probably a better place to start. I was born in India, and when I was 2 years old, my parents, against my own will — there was no child protective services in India at the time — against my own will, brought me to America. And so I've been here since I was two. So, you know, I'm pretty much as American as you, Alan. I'm just not white.
Sure. I'm not either. I just played one on TV.
I'll confirm that.
Yeah.
You're like the guy from Soul Man who paints himself a different color.
That's right.
But anyway, listen. So, you know, when we moved to this country, my dad was a dentist in India, practiced on a military base. He wasn't in the military, but he practiced in the military base. And he came to America to chase the American dream and wanted to be a dentist here in the U.S. And I don't know what happened to him. I guess he forgot to read the rules that you have to go to dental school in America to be a dentist.
Oh, shucks, yeah.
You know, my minor issue, let's move 10,000 miles away and not read the rules. So he did what all other Indians do. He bought a motel. And
is that right?
Well, you know, either we buy motels or taxi cabs or 7-Elevens,
convenience stores, yeah,
or Dunkin' Donuts, yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
Here at the Dental Hacks podcast do not condone stereotypes.
I don't mean to be politically incorrect, and
it's okay if you do it. That's the thing.
Well, it is, but you know, sometimes I get other Indians to say I give them a bad name. I'm like, I think your attitude gives us a bad name.
So, interesting. You know. Interesting.
So, you know, we bought a motel, and you know, it's interesting. I think people sometimes don't understand what it's really like to be at that time. I mean, we're a melting pot today. I mean, today we are a melting pot.
Sure.
But in the late 70s, early 80s, we were not a melting pot, at least from my view. We moved to, I don't know how in the world we ended up in Rockingham, North Carolina, a town of about 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Wow.
Let's move 10,000 miles from home, and let's move to a town of 4,000 people where there is not one Indian person there.
Oh my gosh, that's nuts.
That is totally nuts.
I mean, it's
a corner on the market.
Yeah, that's right. Was there any great story as how they ended up there? It was just the motel came up for sale. Is that the story, or was it? Well, I mean, that is sort of a random chance almost. It's crazy. Well, I love it.
I'll tell you the whole story behind it. And so what happened was, part of this sounds weird to people, but it's a little bit of the Indian culture. But my dad, they moved here. They came, and another friend or acquaintance of his came as well. And my dad tells me one day they were sitting by the river holding hands, which is normal for men to do in the Indian culture, by the way.
Okay, got that.
Check. And they said, "What have we done? We've moved to this country. We don't. They don't even. They all. Everybody. All they eat is meat, and because they're all vegetarian in India at the time, at least." And so he goes, "What are we going to do?" And that's when they had the brilliant idea of buying a motel. So they looked together, And it's interesting what happened. My dad's friend, they both found two motels. One was in Florida. One was in North Carolina. The one in North Carolina had good business, steady business year round. And the one in Florida was in Fort Lauderdale. So it did really good.
You know, seasonally,
six, seven months of the year. But, yeah. You know, roughly they were the same price, roughly made the same amount of money. But my dad wanted to choose the one that was more steady year round. And my dad's friend bought the one in Fort Lauderdale, which happened to be like 2.5 acres on the ocean in Fort Lauderdale on A1A.
Gosh.
And so we bought our motel in 1980 for roughly $500,000. And
okay.
We sold it for $550,000 in.
Whoa, there you go.
In 2000, maybe 2003, 2004, I think we sold it.
Okay.
And my dad's friend bought his place for roughly $500,000, and I think he sold the land for $8 million.
Sure, sure. That is awesome.
So, you know.
Well, so you come from a pretty entrepreneurial background then, it sounds like. I mean.
Well yeah, I don't know if that's from by birth or that's just from what it took. I mean,
yeah, because, you had to do what you had to do, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I tell people, and a lot of times people see me, and you know, listen, I have nice cars, and live a relatively nice house, and I do nice things, but I certainly didn't grow up that way. You know, in fact, growing up, I lived in room 40 of our cockroach motel.
Nice.
Until I think it was 1986, mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, Alan or Jason, but when you're a foreigner, the only brown person in town. And you go ask somebody out on a date and, you know, you say, hey, why don't you come back to my house? And you tell them it's the motel room number 40.
You're smooth. I love that. I
mean, it's not really going to go very far.
Just come on down to room 40. I love that.
If that one's not good enough for you, we can go down to room 39.
I mean. Nice. Okay, so your dad was a dentist in India. Does he have any regrets about not, you know, not going through the training part of it when he came back or not really?
No, none at all. I mean, you know, he was a denture technician to make ends meet in the very beginning before we bought a motel, and
okay.
He did that on the side when we had the motel to kind of stay in touch, and truly that's what sparked my interest in dentistry was sitting in the basement watching him make dentures,
really,
and watching all of that, and it sparked my interest in dentistry, and but he has zero regrets. My dad's an interesting character. He has zero regrets.
That's great. Okay, so you got the idea that you might want to be a dentist by watching him do dentures. I love that.
And he always talked wonderful about the profession. You know, until recently, we had never heard of a bankrupt dentist or an unemployed dentist or, you know, a dentist that didn't, you know, it just sounded too perfect to be true. I mean, you own your own business, you get to do what you want to do to a certain extent. And it sounded perfect to me. I mean, why wouldn't you want to be a dentist?
Yeah.
I have a friend from India and he's trying to get me to go back to India because India's economy is starting to take off and do some dentistry over there. So you might find more people.
Well, you should do a YouTube search for Indian dentist.
I've seen the sidewalk dentist.
Yeah,
that's but that's what's going on there.
Oh my gosh. You could buy his practice, Jason. I'll bet
he would
sell for cheap. Yeah, that's right.
The goodwill would be unbelievable.
Definitely, definitely. You wouldn't. I mean, you'd blend right in to a 6'4" white guy. Right? That'd be perfect.
Yeah, with the southern accent.
That's right. you're a natural. Jason Lipscomb, international dentist. I love that.
So anyway, after that, we moved up in the world and we built a double wide behind the motel. So we lived in the motel parking lot in a double wide.
Excellent.
Until 1991. And in 91, we bought our first house and it was like 1200 square feet. And it was great. I mean, I didn't know any better, to be honest with you. And it's really shaped who I am and what I do. And it's been pretty amazing.
That's a great story. Be hard pressed to find a lot of dentists with a story like that. That's really good. I like that. Well, so okay. So you finished up high school, and then you went. Where'd you go to college?
Well, you know, I knew I wanted to be a dentist since I was in eighth grade. So I went to UMKC. They have one of those combined 6-year programs where you basically enter a guaranteed dental school program out of high school.
Okay.
I went to that. So it was like 2 years of undergrad where you go year round basically, and then you enter dental school as long as you maintain is relatively simple 3.0 or something like that GPA.
Interesting.
Nice.
I was just talking to my wife about that today. Something I said, we were talking about how much debt you know, people are having to go into become dentists nowadays. And I was thinking to myself, why in the world don't we just make it, if you're sure you want to be a dentist from the get-go, why don't we make it 6 years? Because four years of an undergrad degree, so much of that doesn't apply. I have a degree in zoology, you know, which is not,
that would explain everything.
Yeah, I know. Everything's coming into sharp focus now. But yeah, 4 years in college and not very much of it was applicable. And then I went to dental school and did a bunch of the same stuff over again. It's just kind of a 6 year program. That's kind of cool. So you didn't have an undergrad degree. You just have a dental degree.
No,
when you're done.
I do. No. I have both a BA in a BA in BSing. And my DDS degree.
Nice. Okay. So it's no wonder you seemed awfully young when I first saw you on Dental Town. It seemed like the sort of the Doogie Howser thing going. It's because 6 years of dental school, that'll do it. Okay.
Well, you know, it wasn't 6 years of dental school.
Well, 6 years of school total. I got it.
Although dental school did take me an extra couple of months to finish up because I was too busy playing golf and my gambling habit that I had during dental school. So nice. I didn't go to class very often.
Is that right? Tell us more. I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, I went to school in Kansas City, so they had riverboats there. And I don't know if the riverboats existed when I got there or if they just passed that law or whatever it was. So it was so bad at one point that I had it timed that I could leave at lunch if I ran out of my classroom, parked in a certain spot, paid the meter during the morning time. I could drive to the closest casino, gamble for 25, 30 minutes, and then drive back and get back to class on time.
Are you serious? Wow.
And I would do that probably three times a week during the week. And then every week, weekend night, I would be at the casino.
Okay. So what'd you play?
Craps, blackjack.
Okay.
I mean, that's where all my student loan money went.
Okay. So did you win big?
No,
the odds are in your favor.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it made all. But see, the beauty of it was they knew me by name, which they make you feel good. And when you're in college, you love that. And then they feed you like buffet food, which when I was in college, that was awesome. I was like, this is the best thing ever.
It was your meal plan, so to speak.
Basically, yeah. You know, and I ended up with student loans just from my gambling habits. And it got bad where. And, you know, I laugh about it now, but it got bad where we got into sports gambling.
Okay.
And then I was betting $2,000-$3,000 on a game. And but when you bet money on a game, you have a new meaning to watching the game.
Oh, my gosh. You can imagine.
And mind you, I didn't have the money. I mean, it's not like my parents were wealthy or anything. I just, you know, I just took student loans out.
Wow.
We all had E-Trade accounts during dental school during the tech bubble. And we would all sit and watch stocks all day long. And
are you serious?
Legalized form of gambling.
You guys were so sophisticated compared to me. I just was looking for someone to go to the bar with. That was the only thing. I mean, it's so sophisticated. Oh,
they had free drinks at the casino, too.
I probably would have been there. Wow, that's nuts. Okay, so how did that resolve? You just had more student loans than you would have had, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, in our culture, if your parents are able, they pay for school. So, you know, my parents sent me a check every year to the dental school to pay for school. And then I think they gave me $600 a month to live off of, $600 or $800. I can't remember exactly to live off of. And then I was on my own beyond that. And, you know, I had a T-shirt business. I made T-shirts and screen printed and embroidered and sold those at the fraternity houses and sorority houses and stuff to make some extra money. And I had a thriving little business.
Wow.
In school.
So you are an entrepreneur. That's how
I'm a serial entrepreneur. That's, I mean, right. I started a billboard business in high school where we used to sell outdoor advertising to different companies. And that was interesting. That all started because my dad wanted to do billboards for his own for our own motel. And it was cheaper to buy the land or lease the land, build our own billboard, put one up and rent the other three that were on there. Was cheaper than trying to rent somebody else's, and it turned into a decent little business.
Wow. Okay. So this is it's all starting to become clear. You know what it is these entrepreneur types also happen to be the risk takers of people there. So the gambling, entrepreneurship is a lot of times a gamble, and gambling's a gamble. That's interesting. So I can see a little bit more of Tarun than I ever knew here. That's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, everything in life is about. I mean, you only get somewhere when you take a risk.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, to me, I look at my parents and I say, what greater risk is there than moving 10,000 miles away from your family to an unknown place. Listen, in the late 70s, if you wanted Indian food, my parents were telling me that they would have turns where once a month, it would be their turn to drive to New York to buy groceries for the entire Indian community and drive back. That's the only place you got any of this stuff.
I believe that. That's interesting. You know, it's so funny you say that. I'm so much more risk averse now than I was when I first started out in dentistry.
But that's normal. Listen, you have kids, you have family, you have different things going on. You're not 25 years old anymore. You don't have as many years to make it up. You have more to lose now.
Sure. Do you feel like you're less into the risk now? Because you've done some pretty amazing stuff just recently. You've kind of you've been going big with some of the stuff. How do you feel about that compared to the risk you were taking before?
The risk is different now. I still take risks because, quite frankly, I can kind of afford to take some of the risks now, but I wouldn't take as big of a risk or as percentage wise as big of a risk as I used to take.
I don't know. The student loan thing for gambling is I got to say, that is kind of brilliant. Your folks paid for school, so that's kind of awesome.
Well, the school was a different cost. I had some scholarships and all of that. So, I want to say roughly school was only $15,000 a year for tuition that my parents paid when I was in dental school.
Mm-hmm. When did you graduate from dental school again?
In 99.
99, okay. Okay.
I was 23.
Yep. Wow. Yeah. I remember looking back when you were teaching, you were doing the over-the-shoulder stuff and I know that I had graduated in 97. I know that Samir did too. Yeah. And then you were this kid from 99. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Who does he think he is teaching?
Who do I think I am? Well, somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah, but I looked at it and I said, okay, he's been out 2 years less than I have and I don't know anything. And how does he know to teach?
But teaching has nothing to do, or training has nothing, in my opinion, has nothing to do with how long you've been out. Training really is about connecting with people. And at the end of the day, nothing we teach is new. It's all disseminated information or repackaged information that you present in a way that meets somebody's desires or the way they want to learn. And it's just about connecting with that person. I teach implants and in dental school, I watched my first tooth being taken out and I passed out because of the sight of blood and we're doing crazy things now.
Yeah.
I still do that.
Yeah. It's awkward. Awkward when Jason passes out after taking teeth out. Really. A lot of people I know have said this, and I definitely would say this. I look back on dental school and I kind of wish I did okay. I have kind of a creepy recall. I'm really, when you play trivia, you want me on your team because I just have weird recall. I always kind of have. So the didactic stuff, I was pretty good at memorizing, let's just say that. And dental school was particularly focused on that kind of learning. You know what I mean? Like you just memorize the Krebs cycle, stuff like that. So I did pretty well, but it took me a while to get comfortable with the hand skills, you know. And of course, all that is stuff that you can learn, but I didn't learn it as fast as some people, so I felt pretty bad about myself a lot of that time. But I look back, I didn't try very hard on the didactic stuff, and I always worried about the hand stuff. So I kind of went through dental school with a lot of fear and anxiety, which I have regret about because I'm like, dental school is the time for you to screw up. You know, They got to fix it. How bad can it be? They got to fix it.
But it's better than that. It's not that they have to fix it. You're not even there to hear them yell at you about how bad you were.
Yeah. Well, that's how it was. I was. I was so beaten down, and actually, I don't think anyone was all that bad to me. I was just extra sensitive. I had no sense of perspective whatsoever. That clearly led to problems later with me. But dental school, sometimes I wish that I had tried a little bit harder, though.
I had a great experience in dental school.
You really? You're a sick man.
Well, not like I'm saying I loved it or anything, but I didn't have this beat down feeling or anything like that. And I guess I just took it with the punches. My motto was C equals DDS. How little can I work to get out of here?
We joked about that too, but I was always worried that it was actually going to be real. Like they were going to come for me, you know?
Who cares? Whatever.
Well, boy, I didn't have that who cares thing though. And I look back and the guys who were married and had a family or were gonna have a family and had
they were serious.
Yeah, they were serious, but they also had a sense of perspective that if something didn't go great at school, Well, you know, there's other parts to their world where I was sort of pathetic. You know, there weren't other parts to my world. It was school and that was it, you know. And so if things weren't going very well, it was my sense of perspective was really messed up. I still to this day wish I could go back in time and talk to myself. Not that I would have listened, but.
Yeah, but, you know, I finished in the bottom third of my dental school class, and I don't think it was because I was stupid or anything. I didn't apply myself. I didn't need to apply myself because we're all the equal when we get out. It's how you make people feel and how you do from a business perspective and how you choose to run your life and your practice that really makes the difference. And that's what was the difference for me compared to dental. Because, listen, nobody in dental school would think that I could become or do anything that I've done, because I certainly wasn't like this in school.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people that I've heard to say that. I don't know.
I was joking with my patient the other day, and I was placing an implant, and I said, this is kind of funny because I always skipped implants in dental school. And now I place probably more implants than most people that were in my class. And she didn't seem to find the humor in that, but
thanks for that. A lot.
you know, my favorite is when you meet somebody, whether it's another dentist or even some other just regular patients, and, you know, they say, hey, I'm a dentist. Like when I travel, I meet people on the airplane. They go, what school did you go to? And I'm like, I always say I got my degree online.
Yeah. I always
like, what does it matter? What is this obsession with where you went to school? It really does not matter.
No, it clearly doesn't. I can't think of – I've mentioned Minnesota. I went to the University of Minnesota, but in Michigan, like, I'm the only guy in the state of Michigan that went to Minnesota, it seems like, because we've got University of Michigan, University of Detroit, and there's this big Detroit-Michigan thing that goes on, and I went to Minnesota. So it's kind of cool because I don't really have a dog in that fight. But so in the sense, it depends, you know, in Michigan, it matters because the other dentists want to know if you're on their team or the other team. But in reality, I've never had a patient ask me where I went.
Dude, it does not matter. It absolutely
does
not.
No, of course not. It's easy. Some folks can get hung up on the things that are not as important. You know, you sort of alluded to that. It's really what's important is how you treat people and how people perceive you as a person. And of course, the last thing most patients are thinking of is where you went to dental school. I don't know.
I hope that's the last thing. Yeah. I mean, I hope they don't look up my transcripts.
Yeah, seriously. They don't need to know. They don't need to know those things. All right, so we've gotten through your dental school career. So what happened? What happened when you graduated from dental school, Tarun? What'd you do?
I moved back to North Carolina. It's where I always wanted to be. I wanted to be close to my family. That they're ultimately the most important things to me. And so I moved to Raleigh because I wasn't moving back to that hellhole I grew up in, 4,000 people. You know, so I came out of dental school. I moved to Raleigh and. I was ready to open my practice, but my dad said no. So, you know, in our culture, you do what your dad says. And so I got a job working for what was corporate dentistry. I didn't realize at that time in 1999, I don't think corporate dentistry was nearly as big as it is today in 2014.
Sure.
And I got a job working for corporate dentistry, and that lasted 3 months. Okay. I felt that I knew more than they did, which was probably not true because they're a much bigger entity and, you know, had deeper pockets and everything than I did. But I just didn't like it. I just didn't like it. And so I got another job at a private practice, upper scale private practice office. And I learned quite a bit there, but that only lasted 3 months as well.
Okay.
Because I don't know why it only lasted 3 months, to be honest with you, but, I was ready to move on. And at that point I basically said, I'll just open my own office.
Okay.
And so I started from scratch. We opened an office and, it's probably 2001 by that point or late 2000.
Okay.
And I opened my own office, and I had taken some CE classes, that's a interesting story. When most of the time when you graduate dental school or some kind of school, your parents give you a gift of some sort. And my parents' gift to me, because I was a disappointment in my grandfather's eyes because I didn't become a specialist.
Yep. Yeah.
So because, you know, you want to go to more, that's all I wanted to do is go to more school.
Yeah. Cause it worked out so well the first time, right?
Well, with my grades that's the last thing I wanted to do. So
I was just trying to get out. Are you kidding? I sign up for another couple of years.
Yeah. You know, and I wanted to be a general dentist because it gives you freedom to do what the hell you want to do. And, sure. So my parents said to me, hey, listen, You know, our gift to you is going to be, we'll pay for some additional education for you.
Nice.
So they, you know, they pay for my first couple of CE classes.
Okay.
To help me get started. So I took some CE classes and I was hooked on the CE. The only negative in the CE that I took is I couldn't divide the line between what reality was and what was like total rah-rah, like we were talking about earlier
from
your geek conference, from the rah-rah.
Yeah.
And all I heard in 2000, 2001 when I took some of these classes was insurance free.
Oh, yeah.
So when I opened my office, it was a cash-only office, and we were quite busy. I would see probably 1 to 2 patients a week.
Okay, wow.
And
but they're paying cash, so that's good news.
Well, that was even worse. They didn't pay in green dollar bills; they paid in checks. So I had to report it to the government.
Oh yeah, jeez. I think the IRS doesn't listen to the Dental Hacks podcast.
Even if they do, I think that's beyond the time they can audit.
Yeah, I think you're safe for the moment. It's funny. So the insurance free was not maybe the best choice right off, is what you're saying.
No, in fact, but you know what? Looking back, it was a great choice because it allowed me to make a mistake when I could afford to make a mistake.
Sure, sure.
Because I didn't have kids. I wasn't married at the time, and I could afford to make the mistake I could make. And so what happened was, you know, and again, I keep pointing back to my dad and my family, and it's not like I did everything they said, but, you know, that was my sounding board, because we were successful having come from nothing to become something. So I want to go to him for advice when it comes to business or what I should do in my life. And, you know, he said, why don't you give it a year, try how it works. And if it doesn't work after a year, why don't you do what most people do? And that's take insurance and work within the normal workflow of things. And,
okay.
And that's what we did after a year, right after 9/11, I think it was.
Wow.
You know, that was probably more of a mitigating factor there to make it happen. So we started taking insurance and almost immediately things were better. I mean, it was unbelievable how much, you know, I don't want to get on too many soapboxes, but, you know, I hear other dentists talk about, oh, I hate insurance, they take so much money from me. And I go, well, if you would be doing nothing, that would mean produce zero in revenue. And so if they send you patients that you do something on, that produces something in revenue. So it's
interesting, too, because part of it is that a lot of times the patient is going to make their choice of an office right off the bat. Okay, so you'd like to think that they choose your office because your reputation is so good.
Garbage.
But the bottom line is, it's like a lot of times one of the things that they're going to start with you because whoever answered the phone was nice to them, and you are able to work within their insurance to some extent. You know, you're able to say, "Yep, we can work with that." You know, and that's a choice that people make a lot of times. And I mean.
And patients don't know any better. I'm not saying they should know better. I mean, look, if you have a good job, okay, and especially in the Raleigh area, mm-hmm. RTP area, if you have a good job and your one of your benefits is dental insurance that your company provides you, you'd be stupid not to choose to go to a dentist on your plan.
Exactly. The other thing is this is a
why
benefit.
Would you not?
This is part of their pay. Why would they? I mean, part of it is like if they have dental insurance. Who am I to talk them out of using something that they get paid for? Maybe their employer chose a plan that's not so red hot. But the bottom line is, it's a benefit they get. They're not going to sit there and I don't know. If you look at it from a patient's standpoint versus
it's silly not to. And you know, I always go back to something I experienced growing up. Is I remember in our motel. I mean, we would have the nights that we were full. I mean, those weren't nights my dad took like say, oh, let's take it easy. Those are the nights he worked harder. In fact, what he did was if somebody checked out at midnight or, you know, a trucker was on their road for the midnight, my dad would wake me up and say, hey, it's time to go clean a room. We might be able to re-rent this room.
Yeah.
And so it's a mentality. And it was great. I mean, for me, it was great that I tried it without insurance because I don't have any grandeur ideas now. When I'm at a successful, you know, or a relatively successful stage in my life of trying to go down that road. I mean, it's not even, I want to minimize how many insurance we take, get rid of some of the bad ones, but I don't have these ideas like, hey, I want to go cash again or fee for service. I mean, that does not even enter my mind ever.
That is, I mean, honestly, that is, people need to hear that. coming from you, that says a lot, to be honest. I mean, that's,
you know, my goal is, how can I do the type of dentistry that you see on the forums, that you see other people talk about, within the confines of insurance? And sure. That's my sole goal, is how can I continue to do great dentistry and push myself and push my colleagues while taking insurance?
Sure.
I mean, we are a PPO office. We take, I don't know the exact number of PPOs we're on, but I want to say it's anywhere between 6 to 8 or 9 PPOs, and we file for people and all of that business. I mean, and do I love it? Of course not. But it is a reality of the situation.
Sure.
And it's the framework I choose to live with, and it's providing me a pretty nice life, and, you know, I'm not going to complain about it.